When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in education into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
Hooligans and Whovians, welcome to the Doctor Who podcast, Whoway, on post-show recap. We're coming at you live from a floating island, high in space, the PSR whale city, I guess. Adam, Melissa, help me out here.
I would like to keep letting you do whatever you're trying to do, actually.
Yeah,
I don't know.
The matching expressions on Adam's my face just now. We're both like, what is happening?
The floating PSR city, like the city that was floating, wasn't just London.
Yeah.
Also, it is, you know, 9 and 10 a.m., 11 a.m. respectively, where Adam and I are. It's like noon, where you've had a minute to like drink some coffee. I can't even.
Listen, I don't wake up early, so I haven't really been up that long at all. But long enough to talk about Doctor Who here with the two of you for our listeners. As we are continuing our journey into season 5, we're heading into right here, season 5, episode 2, The Beast Below, the second episode of Stephen Moffat's tenure as showrunner on Doctor Who. We were all very, very excited and very high on the previous episode, The 11th Hour. I think I mentioned is probably my top 3 episodes of all time, as a personal favorite. We just loved it as an introduction into Matt Smith as the 11th Doctor, and of course Amy Pond as the new companion. And this is the second episode follow-up, and it's really interesting because Robin and I were actually talking about this, that there always is something like this in the almost repertoire of Doctor Who, where it's like the second episode is almost always like, yeah, hey, new companion, we're going to a place, usually a spaceship or something, and something weird's happening here. And this does follow that.
Reminded me of Rose's second episode.
Yes.
I'm trying to remember the other second episodes, but yeah.
New Earth, which we skipped.
Right.
So it's, yeah, there is some breaks here and there, right? Like Gridlock is very similar in terms like they're on a planet, but it's just like there is something weird going on in the spaceships of this car, essentially. The one that sort of breaks it is Fires of Pompeii, which is Donna's second episode. But I don't know, there is something interesting and cool and makes sense about it, right? Like we're going to put the companion into an interesting situation that feels a little bit contained but can show you who the companion is in some way, shape, or form. What I do like about this is that it does a good balance of the companion and the doctor, because we're getting a lot about what Matt Smith is like here as the doctor. Even though we got quite a bit in the first one, we get a lot in this one. And here's the thing, I still goddamn love it. Like, we talked about him coming fully formed, and goddamn, does it still feel like that in this episode?
We get the full range of like emotion from him, right? Like, I think that's one of my favorite parts of this episode, is like we do get the beginning of the silliness and the, you know, the craziness of we're gonna put water on the ground and like be a little mysterious and like also a little sexy, like, you know, we're gonna be like kind of all over the place with Matt Smith. But then at the end, we get the raw emotion. Like we get like the kind of anger, we get the fire of the doctor a little bit. And it's not, you know, it's not the same fire as David Tennant. And like, it's so hard to like distinguish between the two, especially in these moments when like there is a lot of passion and there is like a lot of this fiery energy, but like, I don't know, the anger of Matt Smith, the way that he's able to portray, like, this is a terrible situation, but like I have to make this choice and like do this, you know, be the one that like is in this position to make these like brutal choices. But then also like I don't know, the way he's interacting with everyone, he's so like flopsy and fun, and it's just like, I'm obsessed with him. I love Matt Smith so much. He does such a good job of portraying this character.
Yeah, there's something about his, like, yeah, when he gets really mad about something and really sort of untethered in that way, that is just so fun and like terrifying. Like, you just feel how powerful this individual is. And yeah, to see just like even a fraction of that in this episode, and I just like can't wait. We're gonna keep seeing it, and it's gonna be so great. But it's just that like run moment from the last episode, right? Like those kinds of situations where he's like, basically I'm a badass. And yeah, it's so good.
Yeah, it's really interesting because like the comparison to David Tennant, I feel like you sort of see a little bit of the differences though, because like I feel like with Tennant's Doctor, when he gets angry, there's almost like a quieter rage to it. Like certainly he totally. Gets loud, but it's never like loud and like kind of like yelling. It's always like this quiet anger and rage, right? Like that's that we see. But with Matt Smith, it is different. Like when he gets angry, he is still animated, but like, you know, emphatic, and like he has like this sort of like raw emotion that comes out. And this is probably another reason why I find him like relatable as a doctor to me in a lot of ways, because Robin has often said this about me, as has other friends, where I have no middle ground when it comes to emotions. I am always high or low. Like there's never just a flat line for me. My experience, like I'm either way up or way down. You can tell how I'm feeling very, very easily. And I think that's the same case here, is like there's no, whenever he's ecstatic, he's very animated, he's very big. And when he's angry, he's still like that. And the emotions are extreme. And so like, I think that's another thing that just hits me to be like, oh man, I really like him, because like there's a connection that can happen there.
Are you really high or really low right now, Kevin? What's your emotions?
I mean, I'm definitely really high. And I think the reason is this episode, I have to admit, when I first watched it, when it first premiered, I thought it was fine, and I thought it was like, oh, okay, I don't know, it doesn't do a ton for me. As I've subsequently watched it, and especially with this latest rewatch, it I feel like I've liked it more and more each time, and this is probably the most I've liked it since that premiere. I think there's a lot in here that really works. I think obviously there's some little small bumps that, you know, to your own personal flavor, but it just does such a good job with, I think, showcasing Amy in a really interesting way, and also again showcasing Matt Smith as a doctor in a really interesting way, with a story that has some timey-wimey elements. It still pulls in Moffat's forte, and I think it comes together really, really well, which, you know, we'll discuss as we go through. But I'm curious about both of your thoughts, as we are now in a world where Melissa has seen these episodes previously. I'd love to hear comparisons about what it was like the first time versus what it's like now.
I don't know that there's a big difference for me. This is one of the episodes that I definitely, like the moment I started watching it, I was like, yep, okay, I remember this one. And partially it is because I have a very consistent fear of like dolls Whales. And clown-like things. And these scowlers are just like too close to any of that stuff. So this, like the fact that they like rotate and then rotate again, I'm like, where are you rotating from? You already rotated. This is 360. It should be the smiley face back. Then the scowling face coming back. Like I would be noping off of this place so fast. So I don't know what's going on. That child is crying. Hope she has a good life. Bye. Like, not my jam in any way. So I applaud Amy and the doctor for being braver than I am. That is for sure. But yeah, no, it's really great. I love all of it. Like the reveal about Liz 10 is just so interesting. The like moral dilemma at the end and the doctor carrying that weight, but then Amy being the one to like figure it out. Yeah. I love so much about this episode, and gosh, the like got you moment at the very end. It's like, so yeah, it's great.
It's really, yeah, I mean, just like completely agree. This is actually one of my favorite episodes from this season. I think it like does really stand out as just being such a good episode, both for the Doctor and for Amy. Like I she just shines so, so much in this episode, her interaction with everyone else, like the way that she's able to make that decision. And then I think like allowing her the ability to like showcase her brain and like be the badass at the end of being like putting these things together when the Doctor can't. We've had this before in Companions. Like this isn't anything new if like the companion figures it out and is the one to like save the day. But I think like the way that Amy is able to like put it together and then simultaneously just do it, just like take charge and actually be the one to do it and not be like, hey, Doctor, what about this? Like, did you think about this? And then have the Doctor be the one to do it. Like the fact that Amy is just like, I need your hand, presses it down and like yeah. does
Hello,
the thing.
Hello, queen of
the Yeah, exactly. Like that to me is like why this episode like really stands out. And then I think the story is just interesting, right? It's mm-hmm. like, okay, let's tell a sci-fi like space alien spaceship story. Like how can we make that kind of thing interesting, especially for me as someone who like doesn't really care about the sci-fi like space alien. Like this is a cool story, like a space whale. That's freaking awesome.
Like, and space whales are definitely like, it's not just a Doctor Who thing, obviously. Yeah, they're definitely real. Okay. But like we have space whales referenced in our Dragonfly game all the time. Like it's mm-hmm. definitely like a space idea that is just really lovely. And then to like the sort of twist on that at the very end, I thought was just very, and then obviously all the, I wrote down Amy's whole like little bits there where yeah. she's comparing the space whale to the Doctor because it's just so lovely.
I mean, it's so cool. And then like, you know, simultaneously, like the comparison of like what humanity is, like we don't lose the morality part of it, even though we're in a weird situation. And you know what I mean? Like we still have the human morality of like, should we forget or should we protest? And it's like, I don't know. Like, it seems like maybe some of that is still a little relevant when it comes to some of the stuff in our own lives. Maybe if just 1% of us would protest, we would, well, except not really, because they just got shoved down in the beast and then it would, whatever. That's a whole separate situation. But it's just really good. The story is like simple enough to understand, yet like complex enough to be like, oh, that's like, that's an interesting situation, you know? Like, I just love this episode. I think it's really, really good.
Yeah.
And the music. The freaking music, well, man. Yeah. I mean, Murray come Gold. On, Murray. Come on.
Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Come on. The space whales thing, I definitely had in my notes to reference, but Melissa's totally right. Like, space whales are like sci-fi thing. They're in Star Trek 4, I believe it is, centers on saving space whales. But there's a lot of, I feel like, of other things that reference like whales in space. I think the concept is just something we as humans love. We like the idea of whales, I guess, and we're just like, what if a whale existed in space? And so we kind of see that reverberate through sci-fi them, I suppose. Yeah, there really is a lot of great stuff in here, so we're gonna get down into it as we break down the episode. But first, as always, we are going to take a quick break.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit amfam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
All right, we are back. Let's talk about the beast below.
Yeah, so we see the city flying through space on the back of a giant shell with the Union Jack printed on it. The skyscrapers all have these illuminated names for different English counties. And then we're in this classroom. Children are filing out, except for this one boy who's sitting at his desk as this like robot auto teacher that we'll call the Smilers is voicing as each children passes, praising each kid until it's the boy's turn. And he says, bad boy, Timmy, zero, with a frowning face. One of the girls, Mandy, tells Timmy with a zero, he'll have to walk home, that if he rides the elevator with a zero, he'll get sent below. Timmy gets in the next elevator like a dummy, even though she just told him not to. And this little girl on the screen starts saying, a horse and a man above, below. One has a plan, but both must go. Mile after mile above, beneath. One has a smile and one has teeth. That the man above might say hello, expect no love from the beast below. The elevator plummets down as the auto teacher's head turns to the frowny face. The lift stops at floor zero and the floor opens over this long drop. And then the head turns again to the scowling face, baring teeth as Timmy falls down into the hole.
So first thing I want to say is you can't ride the elevator with a zero has some real like mean girls. You can't sit with us energy behind it is the first thing I thought of. And secondly, so I think the first time I had watched this, I didn't really know the words to the rhyme. Like I had just heard it and then I never like Googled it. Google was around at that point, but like not easily like searchable on your phone, I feel like, in the way that it is now. But the words to it, the words to the rhyme obviously talk about literally the theme of this episode and literally like what is happening in this episode. And it's kind of really interesting because you don't really think of it, I think, immediately that way. You really also just hear creepy child saying a rhyme and you're like, this is weird and creepy and makes me uncomfortable. But it really is like a strong thematic rhyme. Does this exist outside of this episode?
I was trying to figure that out and I honestly didn't even look it up because I was like, I don't think it does. I just sort of came to that conclusion myself, but I don't know if that's true.
I wish I had context for this. I honestly don't know. I think that it's just its own separate thing here for Doctor Who. I don't think it's anything else, but that could be incorrect.
Yeah.
Let us know. If you're listening and know the answer, let us know.
Yeah, I was like, is this like a child nursery rhyme in the UK or something? But I was like, it's too perfect for this episode. I doubt that's true. And I just didn't bother to look it up because it was late last night. So in the TARDIS, Amy floats in space as the doctor holds onto her ankle. We hear her say, my name is Amy Pond. When I was 7, I had an imaginary friend. Last night was the night before my wedding and my imaginary friend came back. The doctor pulls Amy back inside and she marvels that they're really in space. He notices this passing city on the giant shell and explains in the 29th century, solar flares roast the earth, but the entire human race packs its bags and moves out till the weather improves. Whole nations migrating to the stars. He accidentally shuts Amy out of the TARDIS and then lets her back in, explains this is the United Kingdom of Britain and Northern Ireland, all of it bolted together and floating in the sky. Starship UK. It's Britain, but metal. It's not just a ship, it's an idea. It's a whole country living and laughing and shopping, searching the stars for a new home. Amy asks to go see it, but first the doctor explains an important thing, that they are observers only. That's the one rule I've always stuck to in all my travels. I never get involved in the affairs of other peoples or planets. In my notes, I wrote, since when, in all caps.
Right.
But
That's his one rule. What do you mean?
Yeah. What he always does. We've talked about this several times on this podcast, but that's what the doctor does.
Yeah, but the best part is I usually pull up the transcript for the episode while I'm taking notes to like help me get the dialogue and stuff. And the transcriber of this episode made a note of, sorry, nearly spat my tea all over my keyboard, which was just too perfectly British for this whole thing.
It is extremely British, but it is true. And as we'll see briefly, but I think this is, again, like, there's a theme and there's stuff we see here with this doctor that Moffat does. We've sort of teased the idea of rule number one about the doctor, which we haven't said, but it will be said at a certain point in the season. But, like, this sort of really touches on that because the viewer knows that this is nonsense, right? Like, we're hearing him say this, and not only does the viewer know that it's nonsense, we see this nonsense in the most incredible way 2 seconds later.
Yeah. So the doctor sees Mandy waiting for Timmy on the screen. Amy says they're like a wildlife documentary, how they can't save the wounded little cub. They've got to just keep filming and let it die. She says it's got to be hard. She doesn't think she could do that. And asks the doctor if he finds it hard being like that, all detached and cold. And then she sees the doctor on the screen and runs out after him. A voice tells Amy she's in London Market. She's being monitored. She remarks there's hundreds of years in the future that she's been dead for centuries. The doctor calls Amy a cheery one and tells her to look around and note how the place is wrong. She asks if it's the bicycles. Bit unusual to have bicycles on a spaceship, but the doctor says it's coming from the girl in the nightie. The voice says London Market is a crime-free zone. And the doctor remarks, life on a giant starship, back to basics, bicycles, washing lines, wind-up street lamps, but look closer. Secrets and shadows, lives led in fear, society bent out of shape on the brink of collapse, a police state. excuse me. He takes a glass of water, puts it on the floor, looks at it, and returns it to the table and says to the people at the table, sorry, checking all the water in the area. There's an escaped fish. Where was I? Amy asks him why, and he says, don't know. I think a lot. It's hard to keep track. Now, police state, do you see it yet? Amy asks where, and the doctor says there, and goes over to crying Mandy as one of the elevator winders watches.
There's so much here. Like, it's hard to just keep praising so much about the writing and the style, but it just, there's so much that's incredible. Like, that whole sequence where she's like talking and he's already off screen and he shows up on the viewer is just incredible. Like, I love that bit because it is exactly what we expect of the doctor. But then as he's talking to her and the way that he explains, just like, I don't know why I did that. I think a lot. You know, is really, really fascinating and interesting because it is something in his subconscious mind that maybe said to it, or he does have a reason, as we will find now, but he doesn't want to say it quite yet because he's not sure. There's just so much in here about his behavior and the way he thinks. And I think it's because Matt Smith also as a doctor talks so much that we get such interesting and fascinating insight to how the doctor's brain works in a way that I don't think we've ever had before.
Yeah, I mean, there was like such a silence of Tennant, right? As he was like processing things and like even just going throughout, like we didn't get the constant babbling that we do get of Matt Smith. And I can tell you which one that I prefer personally, but like, I totally agree that like we get this insight into the doctor where normally like we didn't before. And I love the insight. Like, it's so interesting to be like, that's how this works. That's how, you know, and I, because he's not a human. He's like different. It's all new. That's not how I think. I can't think that fast. Are you kidding me? Like, there's no way. And so he's just popping off and I love to see it.
Yeah. And I like that. He's like, yeah, I can't tell if he's lying in this moment or like and being evasive, or if he is just genuinely being like, I don't know, I think a lot, hard to keep track of what I'm doing, but it's like, this did matter briefly, mm-hmm. and it will come back. It's not something that he's actually forgot about, but I thought it was interesting that he's sort of assessing and taking in all sorts of details at the same time and sort of helping Amy figure out how to do that too, which is very cool.
Yeah, we're going to see in like a few seconds here. I'm going to talk about it. But to your point, Adam, about like how we hear him, this next scene, I believe, Melissa, is the one with Mandy's crying and like, what is it? More children's crying. So let's talk about that. But then I want to stop down for a moment on it because it's really fascinating.
Yeah, so we get a brief thing first where a man answers the phone, sees the doctor on the screen. It's the winder on the other end of the call, asks if he's going to tell her, and the man says he's under orders to do so, tells the winder to keep tabs on him. We see this woman in this long red cloak sitting on the floor in front of an array of glasses of water next to a white mask. She gets a call from the man telling her there's been a sighting, and she asks, did he do the thing? And the man confirms, apparently. Amy says it's just one little girl crying, and the doctor says she's crying silently. I mean, children cry because they want attention, because they're hurt or afraid, but when they cry silently, it's because they just can't stop. Any parent knows that. Amy asks if he's a parent, and the doctor doesn't answer. He just says hundreds of parents walking past who spot her, and not one of them's asking her what's wrong, which means they already know, and it's something they don't talk about. Secrets. They're not helping her, so it's something they're afraid of. Shadows. Whatever they're afraid of, it's nowhere to be seen. It means it's everywhere. Police state. Mandy goes up the lift, and the doctor pulls out Mandy's wallet and sends Amy after her, telling her to ask about the smiling fellows in the booths, that they are everywhere. The doctor remarks they're clean, while everything else here is battered and filthy, that no one has touched the booths or walked within 2 feet of them, and wants Amy to ask Mandy why people are scared of the booths. She says she's not even dressed, but the doctor says it's this or Ledworth, and says, what will Amy Pond choose? Ha ha, gotcha. Amy asks what he's going to do, and the doctor says, what I always do, stay out of trouble, badly. Amy says, so this is how it works, doctor. You never interfere in the affairs of other people or planets unless there's children crying. And the doctor says, yes.
This, again, another phenomenal scene. There's like little bits that are really good, like when he mentions like how he got the wallet and it's just like, oh, it fell off her when I bumped into her. It took me 4 times. And it's like, clearly he pickpocketed this child, which is hilarious in its own right. But this, Adam, to your point before, this is the moment to me that really excels, not just to showcase Matt Smith as a doctor, but in my opinion, a change in the writing. That when he talks and explains to Amy how he got from A to B, why he knows something's wrong, And it's the fact that he sees this child silently crying. He explains the fact that children usually cry for one because they want attention or they want something. There's a reason behind it. If you're crying silently, it's because you can't stop. But adults would normally ask a child who's crying like that, what's wrong? And the fact they're not doing it means they know what's wrong and they just are, you know, ignoring it or, you know, realize they can't do anything about it. And that type of deductive reasoning that explains very concisely and honestly, extremely logically, why this is happening is incredible. And I don't want to say we haven't really gotten this type of stuff from this series before, but not like this. I think there's a lot of like, I'll explain at the end. A lot of times it's techno babble. Like, Melissa, this is your stuff, right? Where it gets very just like, what? None of that makes sense. But like, what I love about this is that there is a logic and like storyline that you can follow and you see how he gets there. It's almost like the in-between. We've talked about this before. The like normal person, Sherlock Holmes, the doctor right here, as he explains, is falling in between that you're able to see how he gets from A to B. It takes a moment for you to catch up. Whereas with Sherlock, a lot of times it's just like, how did he get there? And he's like, I don't have time to explain. Shut up. Let's go. And I think it's really interesting and I think really makes for such a fascinating and honestly awesome character.
Yeah, it's really great. It's so easy to follow the logic here and be like, yeah, again, this is the doctor paying attention to children, mm-hmm. something we shouted out in the last episode, and like using them as the canary in the coal mine of the situation of like, oh, if this isn't right, then something bigger is going on here. And I thought that that was just such a great and very like sound logic that, yeah, like if this was happening in, you know, if there was just like a child crying on the bench outside and all these people were like, somebody would be like, are you okay? Like, what's going on? Right. Like it makes sense. And it's logic that we can follow. And even the part about he's like, no one goes near the booths. Like something's up with that. Like not only just like, hey, there's these like weird, creepy masks and booths, but it's also like, no. I know like it's weird that they're here, but it's also how people interact with them that he's picking up on. And I think that just that, like, the amount of this episode that is focused on understanding people and like their psychology, I think is just also really interesting. It's not so much the like random alien techno babble. It's the no. Like this is how people tend to behave in groups or whatever. And if they're not doing that, what does that mean? Which I find really interesting, obviously, as a psychology major person.
Also a group of people who are ostensibly part of a survivor community. We enjoy understanding how people act in interesting situations.
Yeah. So Amy returns Mandy's wallet. Mandy's like, yeah, your friend bumped into me four times or whatever, which was funny.
Just such an amazing line. Just like so casual. Like, yeah, I bumped into him four times. And I was like, okay, so good.
Yeah, she knew. Mandy says there's a hole in the road. They have to go back. But Amy goes past the fencing and says, oh, don't mind me. Never could resist a keep out sign. Amy asks what's under the road, but Mandy says nobody knows. They aren't supposed to talk about it, about below. Amy tells Mandy to watch and learn as she picks a lock with a hairpin while the Smiler is watching. Amy remarks that Amy sounds Scottish, and Amy says Scotland's got to be here somewhere, but Mandy says they wanted their own ship. Amy says, good for them. Nothing changes.
Nothing changes.
Yeah. The Smiler changes to a frowner. Mandy asks how Amy got there, and she says she's just passing through with a guy. Mandy asks if he's her boyfriend, but Amy tells her that she's getting married. Funny how things slip your mind. She says she's getting married, actually married, almost definitely. It's kind of weird. A long time ago, tomorrow morning, I wonder what I did, as she unlocks this workman's hut. The frowner changes to a scowler, and Mandy tells her to stop. Inside, it's all this like pulsing red light, and this tentacle thing lashes out at Amy. She backs out, and suddenly she's surrounded by winders who emit this gas that knocks her out.
Scarecrow grass, I assume, from Batman. They all have access to this. Totally. I don't want to be biased, but I feel like it's hard to like not be, because again, the love of all of this is so high, especially these characters. But like, so this scene is another moment where I'm just like, I love Amy, like, because there's something about like the way she talks and like her humor and sass, but also she just went and just like, I'm just gonna pick this lock, like, I don't, there's a sign, like, it's that Simpsons thing where it's just like, or do, I'm a sign, not a cop, right? Like, it's just like, she's just like, oh, I'm just gonna pick the lock, and it just feels so active in a way that, even though we just all watched four seasons of Doctor Who, I still can't immediately think of moments where companions are almost this active in their own behavior. It always feels like they get kidnapped or they get taken, or here's an exposition dump, or here's like, you know, you got to follow along because of this. And it's like, she's just making choices to be like, I'm just going to go for it. We see a little bit in Donna, especially in Partners in Crime, but it just feels so active. And the way that her character is and written just feels so different to me. And that's why I feel like another reason why I just love her so much as a companion. She just feels, what's the word? Agency. Thank you. There it is. The other A word, agency. Yes. Thank you, Melissa.
Yeah. And then like, you know, she's like doing what the doctor asked her to do, kind of, but like she went off and like the way that she's doing it is so independent and it's so fearless. Like, I think like that, I forget, you know, which one of us said, we probably all said it the last episode, whatever, but like she truly is like fearless and just is going out and like, yeah, I'm going to pick this. Like, who cares? Like, I'm just going to go do what I'm going to do. And like, that's just going to be what it is. Like, I'm not worried about like these signs or this lock or this whatever. Like, she just goes for it.
Yeah. I'm going to have a question about these tentacle things, because it's not totally clear once we see the space whale that these are part of the space whale, or are they there as like part of the ship to be like, oh, the beast below, like part of the propaganda of the beast below, and there's an infestation coming, whatever. And they're like actually not attached to the whale at all. I like could kind of see it being either explanation.
I definitely think it's part of the whale.
Same. For a specific scene.
Okay. Yes. Never mind. We get to that at the end. Mm-hmm. Okay. I understand now. I was confused. I was thinking back on it. This is what happens when I watch late at night and try to think about things. you're totally right. There was part of it later when we like saw it that I was like, where are the tentacles? Like when, and
that's
so
a
I
good question confused. Though. Yeah.
And then my brain went all like, what if it's all a conspiracy? And then I went like, really? But no, you're totally right. We'll get to it. Okay. The doctor is confronted by the woman in red wearing a white mask who says, the impossible truth in a glass of water. Not many people see it, but you do, don't you, doctor? She tells him to keep his voice down, asks him what he sees in the glass, that at the marketplace he placed a glass of water on the floor, then came down to the engine room. The doctor says it's because there's no engine vibration on deck, that a ship this size, engine this big, you'd feel it, the water would move, that it doesn't make sense. The power couplings aren't connected, that it's all hollow. If he didn't know better, he'd say there was no engine at all, but he can see the ship traveling through space. The woman says it's the impossible truth. We're traveling among the stars in a spaceship that could never fly. She doesn't know how, but says there's a darkness at the heart of this nation that threatens every one of them, and says, help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope. Except she doesn't. She says, help me, doctor. You're my only hope. But that was a Star Wars reference, Adam, just so you know.
Boo!
It's not the only one in this episode, Adam. There's a second one coming.
You had to at least know that that was a star. Like, you've heard that.
Yeah, okay, I've seen all of Star Wars, Kevin. It's not like I've never seen it.
Okay.
All of Star Wars, or you've seen three movies?
I've seen all nine movies.
Wow. For someone who doesn't like Star Wars, you have watched a lot of Star Wars.
If it helps. No, it wouldn't help. It wouldn't help. Wouldn't help. Never mind.
Did your brain immediately go when she said, help us, doctor, you're our only hope?
No, I didn't even know. Like,
no, okay, of course. It's like,
I mean, I like you saying it, like, I know it's from Star Wars, but I don't try and connect things to the Star Wars film franchise. Like, that's
you're not... like, I actively try to avoid
okay.
doing
well,
that.
I felt it, and then the transcriber also made a joke about it in the transcription, so okay, I'm not the only one. So,
wow, okay, pop off, transcriber.
Yeah.
we should probably give credit to whoever transcribes at some point, actually. But
the doctor who transcribes is the website that I use, and it's great. I really appreciate it. It's been very helpful.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that pun. That's really good.
Yeah,
the doctor
right?
who transcribes. Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. Also yeah.
Yeah.
All right, I'm still waking up. It's fine. All right.
Yeah, no, big shout out, because I don't have to like pause and rewind stuff anymore to get dialogue, which I very much appreciate. But yeah, so she hands this tracking device to find Amy, says she's safe, that her name is Liz 10, and she'll find the doctor again. Amy wakes up in a chair in front of four screens, two large buttons that are labeled forget and protest, watched by a smiler. The computer says, welcome to voting cubicle 330C. Please leave this installation as you wish to find it. The United Kingdom recognizes the right to know of all its citizens. A presentation concerning the history of Starship UK will begin shortly. Your identity is being verified on our electoral roll. Name, Amelia Jessica Pond, age 1306. Marital status, unknown. On the screen, a man says, you are here because you want to know the truth about the spaceship, and I am talking to you because you're entitled to know. When this presentation is finished, you will have a choice. You may either protest or forget. If you choose to protest, understand this. If just 1% of the population of this ship do likewise, the program will be discontinued with consequences for you all. If you choose to accept the situation, and we hope that you will, then press the forget button. All the information I'm about to give you will be erased from your memory. You will continue to enjoy the safety and amenities of Starship UK, unburdened by the knowledge of what has been done to save you. Here, then, is the truth about Starship UK and the price that has been paid for the safety of the British people. May God have mercy on our souls.
I love that setup also. It's so creepy in its own way. We're just like, what the F is she going to see? And it also, I don't know, it just sets this interesting, interesting tone already into the morality stuff that you tease, yeah. Melissa. But yeah, it's classic Moffat creepiness, which he's so good at.
Yeah,
you got the freaking Zoltar there watching you. Like, you know, there's
good reference, Adam.
Yeah,
there
we go.
You like that? You like that?
Yeah.
Wars. Yeah.
Oh man, I don't. Interesting discussion topic. But anyway, let's.
But yeah, because it's this level of kind of like reprehensible. Are you going to accept the status quo and also not carry the burden of that decision? Mm-hmm. Which is just, yeah, adds like this whole nother layer to it that is really dark. So Amy watches the presentation, presses the forget button, and then plays a message. It's a message from herself who tells her to find the doctor, get him back on the TARDIS, not to let him investigate, to stop him and do whatever you have to get the doctor off the ship. The doctor arrives, sees it's a memory wipe of the last 20 minutes. Amy asks why she'd choose to forget, and Mandy explains everyone chooses the forget button. She explains she's not eligible to vote yet. Only once you're 16, you're allowed to see the film and make your choice, and then once every 5 years. The doctor says, and once every 5 years, everyone chooses to forget what they've learned. Democracy in action.
Listen, by the way, vote at 16, all four. Just going to say.
Oh, 100%.
That would really change this country quite a bit.
Yeah, very down.
Yep.
Yeah, I was watching a TikTok video the other day of a person who lives in Alberta who was talking about how she wanted voting at 16 and like mandatory voting as part of school so that they have to like learn everything. And then she said, and max voting at 75, which
I mean, listen, here's my very, very quick takes on it. Yes, lower the voting age, despite the fact that people right now are also trying to raise it to 25. My people, I mean one specific political party, because they don't want the younger people to vote, because that they know that that works against them. Two, yes, absolutely, you should be automatically registered to vote, and voting should be quote-unquote mandatory, the same way it is in Australia, where it's just like you have to vote, and if you don't, you get fined $20 or whatever it is. It's not a huge fine, but it gets people to vote. Voting also on election day should be a day off. Everyone should have that opportunity. Should not be a working day. Should it be on a Tuesday? And if it is on a Tuesday, again, should be a day off nationally for everyone so you can go do it. And lastly, there should be goddamn age limits on the people who serve in Congress. Because if you're going to have age minimums, certainly, for who can be serving in Congress, you probably should have age maximums. And the people who are making laws that are going to govern us for the next X amount of years shouldn't have to die before they see any effect from it. It's absurd. It's nonsense. Anyway, those are my quick, crazy hot takes very quickly for the political system right now.
Kevin, I'll go hotter than you, because whatever age you're thinking of should be the maximum, I guarantee you, I think it should be at least 10 years younger than that. And then I also do think there should be a maximum voting age. I think it's ridiculous that people who are like over the age of 70 are voting on things that won't even take place until 30
years. Because they also are the ones then who also get who vote more, because they're usually retired or not working or able to get to the voting booth because they're not at their jobs. It's exactly the type of system that's in place that prevents people from voting in a system that's going to end up working for one particular group of people. And it's been perpetuated over and over again.
And just like the voting in this episode of Doctor Who, if you're 80 years old and going into a voting booth, I guarantee you're going to forget everything after you go out of it. So,
Yeah, I was going to say mandatory neurological testing too is probably helpful for people in office. But
anyway, where do we stand on the political spectrum? I don't know.
Yes, but... Who knows?
We've been so subtle about it on this podcast episode. Okay. Where am I in my notes? Basically, democracy in action is the last thing that I said, which is somewhere in this paragraph that I wrote down. Mandy asks the doctor if he's Scottish too, but the doctor says he's way worse than Scottish, that he can't even see the movie. It won't play for him because the computer doesn't accept him as human. Amy says he looks human, but he says she looks Time Lord. They came first. Amy asks if there are other Time Lords, and the doctor says no, there were. But there aren't. Just me now. Long story. There was a bad day. Bad stuff happened. And you know what? I'd love to forget it all. Every last bit of it. But I don't. Not ever. Because this is what I do. Every time. Every day. Every second. This. Hold tight. We're bringing down the government. He hits the protest button and the door slams shut, trapping him and Amy inside. The smiler becomes a scowler and the floor opens to reveal a drop. Outside the cubicle, the sign changes from occupied to empty, and Mandy turns to see the masked woman who tells her it's all right, removes her mask, says it's only her. Amy, the doctor and Amy drop down into a trash compactor, which is the second Star Wars reference we're going to make here. But again, it's from the first movie. It's fine.
So yeah, episode 4, they end up in the trash compactor. There's like an alien like tentacle-y thing in there. It's good stuff.
Yeah. The doctor estimates they're in Lancashire based on the smell, which I assume is a terrible burn for people that know. Notes it's all the food waste for feeding something. Amy comments the floor is rubbery, wet, and slimy, and the doctor says it's not a floor. The next word is kind of a scary word. You probably want to take a moment. Get yourself in a calm place. Go, it's a tongue, a giant, big tongue. Amy comments that they're in a mouth, and the doctor confirms, yes, yes, yes. But on the plus side, roomy. Amy asks how they got out, and the doctor asks how big the beastie is that is gorgeous, that if this is just the mouth, he'd love to see the stomach, though not right now. The doctor remarks it's being fed through surgically implanted feeder tubes, and the regular exit is closed for business as he sees this row of giant teeth. The doctor warns Amy about the swallow reflex and uses a screwdriver to vibrate the chemoreceptors, otherwise known as the eject button, as this wave of vomit approaches. The doctor says, right then, this isn't going to be big on dignity. Geronimo.
I mean, look, it worked for Pinocchio and Geppetto. Why would it not work for these two?
Yeah, it was great. The doctor and Amy are in this overspill pipe. The doctor tells her there's nothing broken. There's no sign of concussion. And yes, she is covered and sick. Amy says it stinks, but the doctor says that's not the pipe. And Amy smells herself, which was very funny. On the door, there is a forget button. The doctor says there's the carrot and here's the stick as two smiler booths light up. The doctor says, there's a creature living in the heart of the ship. What's it doing there? So smilers turn to frowners. And the doctor says, no, that's not going to work on me. So come on. Big old beast below decks. And everyone who protests gets shoved down its throat. That's how it works. The frowners become scowlers. The doctor says, oh, stop it. I'm not leaving and I'm not forgetting. And what are you fellows going to do about it? Stick out your tongues. Suddenly, the scowlers step out of the booths, but Liz comes in and shoots them. The doctor tells her she looks a lot better without her mask. Liz compliments Amy's hair, says it's a shame about the sick, and says Mandy has been very brave that she's been listening in. The doctor says says Liz is over 16 and voted, that whatever this is, she's chosen to forget. But Liz says she's never forgot and never voted because she's not technically a British subject. The doctor asks who and what she is, how she knows him, and Liz says he's a bit hard to miss. Mysterious stranger, MO consistent with higher alien intelligence, hair of an idiot, and says she's been brought up on stories that her whole family has. The scholars are repairing and they move away. Liz says, the doctor, old drinking buddy of Henry XII, tea and scones with Liz too. Vicky was a bit on the fence about you, weren't she? Knighted and exiled you on the same day. And so much for the Virgin Queen, you bad, bad boy. The doctor realizes Liz 10 and she confirms Elizabeth the 10th as she shoots the scholars again. I'm the bloody queen, mate. Basically, I rule.
First off, incredible line. Love her. Something did not even occur to me when I first watched it, but occurred to me now only because of real world circumstance. When this first came about, I was like, oh, Elizabeth the 10th. I was like, yeah, of course, in the future, Britain will have a queen, naturally. And then it occurred to me now, obviously, where I'm just like, oh, or they could have had a king. I mean, like, that actually is quite possible. In fact, majority-wise, they probably have had more kings than queens. But it's just so funny because it's just taking what existed at the time, which is the fact that Elizabeth was still kicking. And it just put it like, oh, Elizabeth the 10th, right? And like, that's, of course, the UK is ruled by a queen. Because I don't probably couldn't even say otherwise. But it's just one of those things where I'm just like, oh, weird. But yeah, just thought it was funny as that occurred to me this time around.
Yeah. There are more tentacles banging at the grating. Amy explains she saw one of them up top, that there was a hole in the road, like it had burst through like a root. The doctor says exactly like a root. It's all one creature, the same one we were inside, reaching out. It must be growing through the mechanisms of the entire ship. Liz asks if it's like an infestation, that someone is helping it, feeding her subjects to it. Liz and Mandy carrying on, but the doctor says, oh, Amy, we should never have come here. We hear Amy's voice from the recording say, don't let him investigate. Stop him. Do whatever you have to. Just please, please get the doctor off the ship. The man from the phone call tells the Winders that 10 has penetrated the lower levels. Initiate the protocol. God save the queen. The doctor asks Liz what's up with all the glasses. She says to remind her every single day that her government is up to something, and it's her duty to find out what. The doctor asks, a queen going undercover to investigate her own kingdom? Liz says secrets are being kept from her, that she doesn't have a choice, that she's been at this 10 years, her entire reign, and they've achieved more in one afternoon. The doctor asks how old she was when she came to throne, and she says 40, that they slowed her body clock to keep her looking like the stamps. The doctor asks if she always dresses like that in public, and she explains undercover isn't easy for her. The autographs, the bunting. The doctor remarks on the mask and says it's air-balanced porcelain, that it stays on itself because it's perfectly sculpted to her face. Liz asks, yeah, so what? And the doctor says, oh, Liz, so everything. The Winders enter and ask what they're doing and say, how dare they enter? The man says, ma'am, you have expressed interest in the interior workings of Starship UK. You will come with us now. As his head becomes a scowler, the doctor says they're half human, half smiler. Liz says she's still their queen. And under whose authority is it done? The man says, the highest authority, ma'am. Liz says she's the highest authority. And he says, yes, ma'am, you must go now, ma'am, to the tower.
This is such a perfect mask thing is a perfect example of, I think, stuff we've referenced, right? Like, we've seen him explain the things, we saw him do the water thing, but this is, and he, with the water thing, he's just like, oh, I'm not sure, I think a lot. But this is exactly the perfect, I think, epitome of it, is that he has caught something that probably every single other person has missed, and even as a viewer might not have put the pieces together. Like, he knows that there's something off about these masks, and he can, as we will see, explain what exactly is wrong. He's figured it out already. And this goes into the same thing where we kind of mentioned this in episode one with young Amy, when he is just like, no, the crack in your wall. And she thought he was still talking about something that they were before. He is constantly thinking steps ahead. He is constantly ahead of everyone else. And everyone else is either playing catch up or he has to explain and catch up to it. And I think it's really great. Again, we're seeing a doctor here we're seeing his cleverness on display. I feel like in a way we don't get to see often. And it works really well.
Well, and Kevin, to what you were saying earlier, it's not like the Sherlock Holmes of like something so complicated that like we could never possibly understand it. It's like, okay, the mask fits perfectly. In my head, it's like, well, she's a queen. She probably has people that can make the mask fit perfectly. Like, it's not a big thing at all. And the doctor's like, okay, no, it's actually more complex. But then it's also not like something ridiculously convoluted or so intellectually like whatever that we would never be able to understand. It's like, oh, okay. Like that, you know, it makes so much sense. I love that moment. And I feel like we get that so often with Moffat and especially with Matt Smith here. It's just like, it works just so, so well. I totally agree, Kevin. It's like this perfect encapsulation of like, oh, okay. This is where this is going. I get it now.
Yeah. And like a little timey-wimey, right? Which is always
fun.
In the tower.
I was going to say, he also, and we get to see this a little bit later too, but like another thing I like about this version is that he is a show-off. Like the doctor likes being clever. It's always there. But like as much as he is talking and talking through stuff and helping get people on his page, he is also very clearly enjoying the fact that he is the smartest person there and is really showing himself off about how smart he is. And I also like that. I like the little bit of ego that is coming on here in a very interesting way, not in some of the ways we've seen previously. Again, the doctor having an ego is not something new, but how it manifests itself is new per incarnation. And I really love this version of that.
He has a flair for the dramatic, and we love
yes.
it. In the tower, more tentacles are hitting at a grate. The doctor explains they are at the lowest point of Starship UK, the dungeon. The man is Hawthorne, who's down there. The doctor asks about the children. Hawthorne explains protesters and citizens of limited value are fed to the beast, but for some reason it won't eat the children. They are the first adults it spared. They are very lucky. The doctor says, yeah, look at us. Torture chamber of the Tower of London. Lucky, lucky, lucky. Except it's not a torture chamber, is it? Well, except it is. Except it isn't. Depends on your angle. We see the top of a pulsating brain visible in the middle of the room with giant electrodes pointing at it. The doctor explains, it's like I said, it depends on the angle. It's either the exposed pain center of Big Fella's brain being tortured relentlessly, or it's the gas pedal, accelerator, Starship UK's go faster button. Liz says she doesn't understand, but the doctor says, don't you? Try to. Go on. The spaceship that could never fly, no vibration on deck. This creature, this poor, trapped, terrified creature, it's not infesting you. It's not invading. It's what you have instead of an engine. And this place down here is where you hurt it, where you torture it day after day just to keep it moving. Tell you what, normally it's above the range of human hearing. This is the sound none of you wanted to hear. He points the screwdriver at a tentacle and you hear the screaming sound. Liz tells them to stop it, asks them who did this, but Hawthorne says they act on the instructions from the highest authority. Liz says she's the highest authority and demands the creature be released. The doctor says, Liz, your mask. Liz asks, what about the mask? And the doctor says it's old, at least 200 years old, I'd say. Liz says it's an antique, but the doctor says an antique made by craftsmen over 200 years ago and perfectly sculpted to your face. They slowed your body clock all right, but you're not 50, nearer 300, and it's been a long old reign. Liz says she's been on the throne for 10 years, but the doctor says the same 10 years over and over again, always leading her here. We see two buttons, forget and abdicate. Hawthorne says he's only done what Liz has ordered, that the winders and smilers work for her. There's a video of Liz on the screen that says, if you're watching this, if I am watching this, then I've found my way to the Tower of London. The creature you're looking at is called a Starwell. Once there were millions of them. They lived in the depths of space and, according to legend, guided the early space travelers through the asteroid belts. This one, as far as we are aware, is the last of its kind. And what we have done to it breaks my heart. The Earth was burning. Our sun had turned on us and every other nation had fled to the skies. Our children screamed as the skies grew hotter. And then it came like a miracle. The last of the Starwells. We trapped it. We built our ship around it. And we rode on its back to safety. If you wish our voyage to continue, then you must press the forget button. Be again the heart of this nation untainted. If not, press the other button. Your reign will end, the Starwell will be released, and our ship will disintegrate. I hope I keep the strength to make the right decision.
This moment is effing dope. From a storytelling perspective, it's so well executed, so well delivered. Plays with the timey-wimey stuff, that entire thing of just like you've just been living the same 10 years over and over and over again. And which is its own interesting thing. It says a lot about Liz, of just the inquisitive nature of her and that the fact that she just keeps ending up in the same spot because she refuses to just like accept things as they are. But then finding out the truth obviously has to make a very, very difficult decision, as is essentially stated, where it's just like, well, you could essentially kill everyone or continue to torture this animal. And it's just like, like it's a really hard decision in a lot of ways, but it's just so well executed to get to this point and feels like such a fantastic and fascinating payoff to the journey we've been on so far.
Yeah. It's interesting though, because that's not the choice that she's making, right? It's not like everyone lives or continue torturing this animal. It's everyone lives or you forget that you're torturing this animal under your order, which is just like, again, like this level of evil that is,
I mean, it's like the level of evil, but also it's like the, how many things could we say about like just the ignorance of, our own society? And like, it's not like we are being forced to forget some of these things, but like, let's be honest, we all have these things that like we put out of our minds because we like don't want to actively think about how bad they are, like how much like worse we are making them, everyone else is making them, and like we just don't want to do anything about it. And so I think like, okay, it's not the same thing as like some machine wiping our memories, but like, it kind of is in a way.
No, for sure. The exploitation of resources and people and it's a part of, we all do this. Amy says she voted for this and asked why she would do that. The doctor says, because you knew if we stayed here, I'd be faced with an impossible choice, humanity or the alien. You took it upon yourself to save me from that. And that was wrong. You don't ever decide what I need to know. Amy says she doesn't even remember doing it. And the doctor says she did it. And that's what counts. Amy says she's sorry, but the doctor says he doesn't care. And when he's done here, she's going home. Amy says she made one mistake. She doesn't even remember doing it. And the doctor says, yeah, I know. You're only human. Liz asks what he's doing, and the doctor says, the worst thing I'll ever do. I'm going to pass a massive electrical charge through the star whale's brain, should knock out all its higher functions, leave it a vegetable. The ship will still fly, but the whale won't feel it. Amy says that'll be like killing it, and the doctor says, look, three options. One, I let the star whale continue in unendurable agony for hundreds more years. Two, I kill everyone on this ship. Three, I murder a beautiful, innocent creature as painlessly as I can, and then I find a new name because I won't be the doctor anymore.
It's brutal, right? Like, it's very brutal. I'm like, this is like the big morality question of this. And it's like, okay, I don't know. I don't know what I would do if I were the doctor. I have no idea, like, being put in this situation. And I think, like, this to me is what really elevates this story, because, like, it's so, it's like interesting and also devastating in a way mm-hmm. that is like, I understand all of these options. It's not like one of these is like so techno babble or so like spacey, timey wimey, whatever. Yeah. It's like, okay, here's the situation. We're exploiting this creature. What do we do about it? Like, we know the stakes of the situation. We understand the size of the equation. Like, how do we actually figure this out? And I think that, like, the explanation that the doctor comes up with, like, the reason why what we're about to get to is a twist, like, the reason why it is a twist is because I actually think that, like, the solution the doctor finds initially is, like, okay, like, you know what I mean? Like, I guess, like, that's where this goes. And it would have been really devastating and sad for that to be how it actually ended, but I think it would have made sense for a solution that the doctor could have come up with. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think it was like that crazy or like mm-hmm. whatever of an outcome. He was like trying to figure out the best situation for everyone involved. So like, we didn't kill an entire like race of people. And also like the creature gets to live on, whatever that necessarily means in this situation. It's not like that crazy, but like, it's tough. It's a tough choice. And I think like the aftermath of the doctor saying this is what's going on and like laying out the options clearly, I think we like see everyone kind of like sulking on the side, because what else do you do? Like, what other solution is there? Like, what is the other like alternative going on here? And again, I think there's a lot that can be said about today's society and today's day and age in terms of like the shitty things that we have to do in order to like keep moving on, like finding the best situation. But like, it's tough. I don't know. I'm just rambling now at this point, but it's like, it's a very tough moral dilemma here that like the doctor is faced with. And he comes up with an interesting solution that is like ultimately still devastating, even if it were to happen.
It's really interesting because there's a lot in here that I think speaks to the doctor, but also speaks to themes, I think, of what we'll be seeing throughout this series with this doctor. It touches on previous stuff, because the idea too of him being mad at Amy for making a decision that essentially keeping him from knowing, prohibiting him from learning, so he, you know, is burdened with it because there's no way mm-hmm. for him to forget, is very fascinating, because it's very human in the way to like be ignorant or to choose to forget, right? But like the doctor, and I think this is something very big for him, doesn't wish to forget. As much as like we'll see some themes played with this, he wants, like, the burdens that happen are things he feels like he needs to carry in some way, shape, or form. And the idea of being able to wipe it out of your memory, he is not for, especially if someone is prohibiting him from learning information, so he has to carry that. And I think it's really, really interesting in that way to see that come out like this, because it's not said, it's all subtle. And I think so much of what's done here in what Amy ultimately determines is, again, subtlety of picking up clues, of paying attention in the way that the doctor kind of pays attention to stuff. And it's also bordering on the fact that the doctor doesn't see himself in certain ways, and it took someone else seeing him in a light to realize other things can be like this. And I think it's really fascinating and really interesting. There's a lot of subtle themes at play that work really well when you kind of like dig down into it.
Yeah. Liz says there must be some other way, but the doctor says, nobody talk to me. Nobody human has anything to say to me today. More children enter. Mandy sees Timmy, and this tentacle taps Mandy on the shoulder and she strokes it. We hear the doctor say, come on, use your eyes, notice everything. We hear Liz say, our children screamed. It came like a miracle. Hawthorne says, it won't eat the children. Liz says, the children screamed. Then it came. It's the last of its kind. The doctor voice says, just me now. Liz says, the last of its kind. Amy says, is this how it works, doctor? You never interfere with other people and planets unless it's children crying. We hear all these voices repeating as Amy is watching the children and the tentacle interact. And she says, doctor, stop. Whatever you're doing, stop it now. Sorry, Your Majesty, going to need a hand. She drags Liz to the voting button and pushes her hand on the abdicate button. The whale roars, the ship rocks. The doctor asks Amy what she's done, and she says, nothing at all. Am I right? Hawthorne remarks they've increased speed, and Amy says, yeah, well, you've stopped torturing the pilot. Gotta help. Liz says, it's still here. I don't understand. And Amy explains, the Starwell didn't come like a miracle all those years ago. It volunteered. You didn't have to trap it or torture it. That was all just you. It came because it couldn't stand to watch your children cry. What if you were really old and really kind and alone? Your whole race dead. No future. What couldn't you do then? If you were that old and that kind and the very last of your kind, you couldn't just stand there and watch children cry. This is why she's the best.
Fantastic. It's great. I mean, honestly, that is, yes, Melissa, 100%, right? This is what makes Amy, I think, so great, in my opinion. There is a cleverness to her that is just incredible. Like, she figures it all out and she puts the pieces together. And what's really fascinating, really interesting, and we'll kind of touch on this momentarily, is that a lot of times with the companions, the doctor has to give essentially this entire exposition dump of, like, I'm the last of the Time Lords. I have to do this bad thing. There was a time war. Here's all the backstory, and here's all the bad things that happened. And the companion has to process that for a while and then sort of end up like, okay, cool, I kind of understand it. We get very little about what actually happened. The doctor says, cliff notes, here's what went down. It's a very bad day. I'm the last of my kind. But there's pain and obviously hurt in his eyes. And Amy got it. Amy understood and was able to then transpose that ideology somewhere else. There's a level, again, of just cleverness and intelligence to her, and obviously sassiness. Like, there's just so much that makes her such a dimensionalized character that she's incredible.
Yeah, and I think, like, the word sassiness, I think, is really interesting, because I would associate that with Donna and the way that she would have done something like this. The word that I would use for Amy is, like, confidence. Like, I don't know, I don't even necessarily know that she's, like, as sassy, but, like, we didn't see that confidence truly with Donna. We see it with Amy. She is, once she, like, clicks, once this clicks and she figures it out, she's like, well, yeah, if we stop freaking torturing the bloody pilot, like, of course it's gonna go faster. Like, she's just so confident that she's like, she figured this out. And I just love that about her character, because it's so instantaneous, right? We, like, I mentioned this earlier, like, the sulking that was happening right after the doctor is like, this is what I'm gonna do to the creature, and everyone was just like, damn, like, this sucks, like, this is the worst thing ever. Everyone's like sulking in the corner, and then boom, click, she realized it. Yes, like, it's full confidence. She, like, fully believes in herself and the solution she's able to come up with. Like, she's really, really an incredible talent, and I think that, like, it showcased right from the beginning here with this character. I'm still excited for that story arc that we're going to see her go on throughout the entirety of her run, but, like, right from the start, she is such a confident companion that is able to do so much. She's such a badass. Like, she really, really is, and I love her so much for it.
The other thing that I really, really love about this is that the trait of the doctors that she has most narrowed in on is his kindness, because for her, their entire relationship started when she was a little girl and he listened to her. He investigated this crack in her wall that she was concerned about, that all these other adults had brushed by. She sees him for his kindness before his, you know, intelligence and the fact that he can take her through time and space and all of these other things. And I don't know that is a trait of the doctors that always gets emphasized as much as some of the others. It's certainly something where we're like, yeah, the doctor, like, wants to help people and whatever. But just like that narrowing in of, like, what if you were really old and really kind? And I'm like, ugh. Like, I get, like, chills thinking about it, because I think it's so beautiful the way that she's like, she's giving this whole monologue about the whale, but she's looking at the doctor the whole time she's doing it, right? Mm-hmm. And she has seen this in him, and this is part of the foundation of their relationship that is going to go forward in the season, which I think is really great.
Yeah.
So Amy says there will be no more secrets on Starship UK. She holds out the Queen's mask to the doctor. The doctor tells Amy she could have killed everyone on the ship. And she says, he could have killed a star whale. And the doctor says, yeah, and you saved it. I know. Amy says, amazing though, don't you think? The star whale, all that pain and misery and loneliness, and it just made it kind. The doctor says she couldn't have known how it would react, and Amy says, you couldn't, but I've seen it before. Very old and very kind, and the very, very last sound a bit familiar? They hug, and Amy says, gotcha. And the doctor says, gotcha. It's this very cute moment.
Amazing. There's this comment I want to make here, but I can't because it will spoil stuff in the future. But just there's a lot of little stuff here that I think back on. I'm just like, you know, it's funny. But yeah.
Yeah. Amy says if they should say goodbye. And the doctor says they'll wonder where they went for the rest of their lives. Oh, the songs they'll write. But he says, never mind them. Big day tomorrow. Amy says, sorry, what? And the doctor explains, it's always a big day tomorrow. He's got a time machine. He always skips the little ones. Amy asks the doctor if he's ever run away from something because he was scared or not ready or just because he could. The doctor says, once, a long time ago. Amy asks what happened. And the doctor says, hello, and sort of gestures around. Amy says there's something she hasn't told him, but then a phone is ringing. She remarks the people call him, but the doctor says, it's a phone box, and gets her to answer. She says, it's the prime minister. The doctor asks, which prime minister? Amy says, the British one. Dr. Shess, which British one? She says, Winston Churchill for you. Churchill says to the doctor, tricky situation, doctor, potentially very dangerous. I think I'm going to need you, as there is the shadow of a Dalek on the wall. The doctor tells the prime minister not to worry. They're on their way. Amy's voice says, in bed above, we're deep asleep, while greater love lies further deep. The stream must end. This world must know. We all depend on the beast below. As the Starship UK travels on with a W-shaped crack, letting light shine through the hull.
Indeed. And that's where the episode wraps. The adjusting of the rhyme is really, really nice. Obviously, the idea of like they're gonna write stories about us, but it's really just changing the perspective on like their life and the animal that they're with. And which is also its own thing. Like if you've seen the movie Nope, there's a lot about that too. A lot of themes about animals and treating them and everything, which I think is really fascinating and interesting. But yeah, the tease of Winston Churchill, one, and then the crack in the universe and world, which will be a theme that's going to continue throughout the season, is really great. And it feels like, yeah, the season flows so well from one episode into the other, I believe, which is great. It feels very connected. Something I really like, and we lose a little bit later on in the series, but I personally love it because I love that type of storytelling. In terms of continuity, obviously the crack in the universe, yes. But also, we keep note of Liz 10 and those references to the previous queen. It's just a runner that's going to continue for a bit. But yeah, I think those are the main continuity things from this episode. But yeah, with that, here's what we thought about it. But let's hear what other people thought about it. Adam, what we got for feedback this week?
Yeah, so as always, please keep sending in your feedback. We love to get it. We have quite a bit for this episode, as well as a smattering from someone who caught up this past week. We have a little bit of that as well. So let's start with the stuff from this episode from Emily. What a sad episode. I look forward to the debate regarding the doctor's decision to make the whale a veggie and if he had actually selected the best option out of the three he listed. Also, Sophie Okonedo, I don't know if that's how you pronounce it. I have no idea who that is. I'm assuming it's Liz 10. Is a star and deserves, oh, that's that famous person recognition, if we're still tracking that. I don't know if you guys are familiar. Regarding that first question of like his decision to turn the star into a veggie, I think it's like the best of the three options that he listed, but obviously like not the best.
Not a good option.
But I would probably say that's the best of the three options. But and do you know who this this actress is? I'm assuming it's the woman who plays Liz 10, but I was not familiar with her.
It is Liz 10. She's been in a lot of stuff. Like she's been in most recently Death on the Nile was the one that I just saw. Okay. Which is the what is the author's name? How am I blanking on this?
Christie, right?
Yes, thank you. Agatha Christie, based on that. She apparently was in the new Hellboy. She was in Christopher Robin. She's definitely been in a lot of stuff. The Wheel of Time, apparently, at one point. So she's definitely here and there in a number of stuff.
Kevin, you know that the Wheel of Time is a show that I think is coming out with a second season that I'm sure there's like a million podcasts a week on Post-Show Recaps that you can find. Patreon.com/Post-Show Recaps. There's so many Wheel of Time podcasts. Probably.
Indeed. Feel like we know some people who might be doing that.
We probably do. We're probably going to be getting feedback from one of them. I bet that she's on the... Anyway, okay. From Daniel. I have no idea. I am sure there are podcasts about it. Go listen to that.
Wait, you don't know? Yeah, there's three different podcasts.
For sure. Yeah, we love
Taylor. Taylor is on one of them. Yes, it is happening.
Rich is the other.
I actually did not know that a piece of information. So this was just speculation. Yeah. But it's a pretty safe bet. I mean, it's not like I'm taking a leap here. From Daniel. Oh, the creepy carnival fortune teller box thing is one of the creepiest Doctor Who things. Queen Elizabeth X so obsessed with Elizabeth I that we named our daughter after her. I love that Elizabeth is a recurring entity in Doctor Who. This was a great new companion second episode. Fits the pattern. Really reminds me of the end of the world, as we were saying before. Absolutely. Naming your daughter after Elizabeth I. How do we feel about the name Elizabeth?
I like it as a name. Yeah. I have a friend named Liz. Call her Liz 10 now.
I'm a big fan though of Liz as the nickname for it, and not Beth as the
not
nickname
Beth
for it.
Okay. Yeah. What about like Lizzie?
Like, to me, like Beth feels like a different name.
I mean, hey, you know, okay, Beth, but what Beth would be sure.
Yeah, why don't you like Beth?
I have friends named Beth. I just, to me, I don't associate Beth with Elizabeth. Like, to me, those feel like different names. I don't think, like, to me, if you're going to shorten Elizabeth, I think like Liz or Lizzie. Yeah.
What about Eliza? I don't know. Now we're just listing names.
I think that might be a different name again.
Wait, is Eliza not short for Elizabeth?
I don't think so. I think people are just named Eliza, right?
I think people could just be named Beth.
Yeah,
right. That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying.
But I think the origin might be Elizabeth. It might, because like I think people shouldn't end up now where it's just Beth or Eliza, but maybe the origin is Elizabeth. I don't know. That's a tricky one, actually. I'm not sure.
Also, I pulled up Sophie Oganetto's IMDb. She voiced one of the demons in His Dark Materials that I but yeah, also like Wheel of Time, The Secret Life of Bees, just to like shout out a really old movie, Hotel Rwanda. Yeah, she's been on a bunch of stuff.
Okay, she's popping up. Maybe should she be on the list of like our
Hellboy
famous person tracker?
I mean, she is a famous person from movies who is on this show. I don't know that she is like
as recognizable as like your Karen Gillian's and Andrew Garfield's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, Emily thought that I don't know. I didn't know her stuff, but it seemed like she's in a lot of things that I just like haven't happened to see. So like maybe I don't know. I don't know.
I feel like she's probably on the level of like a Carrie Mulligan, although Carrie Mulligan did have Academy under her, but like I feel like that's the level, you know.
Okay, I mean that's a pretty high level, so
yeah,
you know, good for her
critically. But we're talking about like famous, right? Like
yeah, we're talking just like famous.
That's this for
okay,
that's so from Spider-Man, you know, like that's
from Nicole. I really enjoyed this episode. At first it seemed like it was going to be another typical alien monster of the week episode like we've seen over the past four seasons, but it was so much better constructed. This episode in seasons 1-4 would have been average to below average at best, and now in this season I thought it was really compelling. I love that Amy gets to be the MVP of the episode who figures out the best answer. Matt Smith's anger at the whole situation is really intriguing to me, and much darker and more loathing than I think David Tennant would have been under these circumstances. And of course there are a lot of interesting metaphors in the story about the kinds of suffering and sacrifice we are willing to accept and who we are willing to accept it from for the greater good of society. All the new flavors of Doctor and Companion are really coming through in this episode. Feels like we're starting to hit our stride. That said, I watched ahead and I really hope we're skipping the next episode and going straight to the Time of Angels. Unfortunately, Nicole, we're not.
No,
we're getting it, baby.
Absolutely not. We're going to take all of the Matt Smith we possibly can.
Like, is it one of the weaker episodes of the season? Yes. But
also, like, how do we not do it? They set it up with Winston Churchill and Daleks. So, like, how do we not talk about that? Okay, and then finally for this episode from Stuart, while the last episode is the perfect introduction, this is the perfect qualifier for the companion. From the outset, the writing brilliantly intertwines a fairly straightforward mystery with layers of complexity and delves into a really horrible moral dilemma beneath the surface. This is the really good stuff. The way in which the Doctor tells Amy to observe, to show her what he sees with alien eyes is so well done, and to have it pay off with Amy being the one to notice something he wouldn't because he can't observe himself is damn good writing. Liz 10 is a great addition. The cheeky nod to the Virgin Queen was the line, "I'm the bloody queen, mate." The only note is that they're all saying ma'am wrong. Oh, it's ma'am as in ham, not marm as in farm. Now, okay, here's the problem with me reading the things that Stuart is writing. He's saying the base words differently than I'm saying. So like, it's mom is in ham. How do you say ham?
Ham.
No. That's how we say ham. How would Stuart say ham? I don't think Stuart's saying ham. Like, I don't think that's what he's saying.
Ham. No, but I think he's saying that it's like ham. It's ma'am, not marm, which I've definitely heard.
Mom.
Like, ham. More of like an R.
Say marm in this?
Yeah. I think he's saying that they pronounced it more that way. I will trust Stuart's analysis of this better than ours.
Ham.
Ma'am.
It's
ham.
Ma'am is in ham.
What are we doing right now?
Ma'am ham. Mom's not okay. Yeah, I don't know. Royal protocol has seemingly gone out the window in the 1,000 years that have passed. Finally, look, I know we have gushed about the music this past week, but it has to be said again, A Lonely Decision, yeah, from the soundtrack is a beautiful piece of music that blends this lonely melancholia with a sense of hope, which is everything I think the Doctor ultimately is currently. I don't know what has changed. The music has always been good, but this particular series is just wondrous. It just really is. It's 100% really agree.
I think I always thought it was Marm because I thought it was closer to like mom. Like I thought she was like, you know, mother of the nation kind of
Mom is in hom, farm.
Hello, mom.
It's a farm. Let's go out to the farm. I don't know. I don't I'm trying to do a British accent. It's not going very well.
Great. Okay.
It's going poorly. Can anyone pull one out? Didn't have a British accent on them? No.
No, not a good one.
I mean, mine hasn't been good. What have we been doing here? This is okay. All right. From Taylor, who went
rain in Spain, falls mainly on the plane. There's my British accent.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so just a quick smattering from Taylor, who is fully caught up. We have updated scores and stuff like that as well too. We'll talk about probably later in the season when we get to that point. But just a few things. So from Midnight, all the way back in Midnight, if you remember these episodes, I just had to read some of this. Humans suck is what she has to say about
not
that.
Wrong. There's
obviously more, but I just love that little line there. From Journey's End, she had a lot to say here. So damn, Mickey and Jackie, we love German Dalek is really something. Love that the Crucible is just the Death Star. So that's another little Star Wars reference.
Star Wars. Yeah,
there's a lot of them.
Donna, you brilliant bitch. I have no idea what that's in reference to, but I just am so happy to see that here.
Just always applicable.
It's always so good. And then, of course, we have Jack, you beautiful bastard. Love to see it. Why do they want to vaporize the entire universe, though? I mean, I guess being the only life form is something, but gosh, they're so clever. They must know that's not going to lead to whole other issues. Dr. Donna MF and Noble, so we love that. K9, we love K9, of course. And then sweet Wilfred. And then she finishes up by saying, well, that was just lovely in the saddest of days. In the ways, days. I don't know. I'm losing my mind here. It's early. I'm still waking up. and then finally from 11th hour, stuff from Taylor. This poor little girl. I like this Matt Smith much better than the one in Hot D. I don't know if we've talked about our dear beloved Matt Smith, who was in House of the Dragon. I didn't love the show, but I watched for Matt Smith, so yeah, that counts for something, right? No, this maybe is not the podcast for them.
Listen, he's great in the things he does. Even in Morbius, from what I hear, he is the best part of that.
He's
movie.
In Morbius?
He's the bad guy.
Oh,
and apparently he's the best part of that movie. I don't encourage anyone watching that film, but
unless the studios are listening, and then I do think they should re-release it because I would go see it.
Third time's a charm, guys.
I would see it. Do it again. The third time.
Yeah, we're all gonna watch it if you release it a third time.
We promise. Yeah, we promise. Okay, Taylor said, "What is the eel thing?" Here's older Amelia confirmed. We wonderful. And then she says, right, he's her friend from the Umbrella Academy. So cute. I don't know what the Umbrella Academy is, but someone, I don't know.
The Umbrella Academy. Which
is
one
it Rory,
people?
Maybe? Do you think it's Rory? I don't know. I've never seen the Umbrella Academy.
I don't think Arthur Darvill is in the Umbrella Academy, unless it was a season I haven't watched, but.
Is it good? Is Umbrella Academy good? Should I watch it?
That's a really tough thing for me to answer.
Okay. Well, fair enough.
Are you contractually obligated to say it's good?
I'm not contractually obligated to say it's good. I'm just going to say it's not my thing. I know there's a lot of people who really love it, and I know if it's a certain vibe, and if is your vibe, like, yeah,
okay,
you do you. But it's not for me. I watched the first two seasons, and I was just like, this isn't for me. And so I haven't continued, but I know a lot of people love it. And I think it's a certain type of show and aesthetic and vibe that, that people can really get behind. So not gonna hate on anyone.
In the Umbrella Academy. Apparently.
She was in, yes, correct. Huh. She was an assassin.
Oh, okay. Spoilers.
Okay. Not really. She's introduced that way.
Final couple of comments from Taylor on the 11th hour. Bow ties are cool. Yeah, they are.
Yes.
She also says, wow, the new Tard is sexy. Can confirm.
I mean, this is very funny that she actually said that for reasons that will become evident later.
The night before your wedding, and then we get girl in all caps with a bunch of R's and a bunch of L's. So there's that. And then finally, and River in the preview as well. Oh boy, I'm excited. Yeah, I picked back up like watching this episode this morning, but it like was still in the last couple minutes of the preview from the last episode. And so I was like, well, I'm going to watch the season preview because, you know, and it just got me so hype yet again. So pop off. Okay. Taylor, thanks so much for catching up and watching back. I put all the scores in. And so everything is updated there, which is very, very exciting. Anyone can catch up at any point and send in all your feedback. We'll read it. Yes. We love to see feedback from any time.
Absolutely agree. Send in your feedback and send in your scores. Always happy to have them. And as we've done with Taylor, incorporate them into where we are. And we'll probably, yes, go over new updated scores probably at the end of the season. But for now, let's talk about this week's scores. Melissa, what do you got for Wibbly Wobbly Timey Wimey?
Yeah, I was still trying to figure out who was in the Umbrella Academy, but okay, I am forcing myself not to start grading these episodes on a curve. I was like trying to be like, okay, well, all of these episodes are great, so like, are they all just getting really high marks? Is that like, is it, where does it fall compared to the last one? But then I was also thinking of like, where does it fall compared to the last four seasons that we've watched? So, I've got Wibbly Wobbly at a 4.5. It's just still, there's so much good stuff. The like Starwell of it all, the moral dilemma of it all, Amy being incredible, the like emotional beat here with the doctor. There's just enough good stuff here. Timey Wimey, I've gone 3.5. There's not like a lot of time, but there's a little bit of time. But then this whole like Starwell city and space stuff that I give credit to for the timey wimey aspect.
Adam, what about you? I mean, that all tracks for me, but.
Oh, yeah, Jazzy like, Kevin. I am at a 4.5 for Wibbly Wobbly. I think it makes a lot of sense. This is one of my favorite episodes of the season. I think it's a really top-notch episode. I think the acting is really good. I think the writing is really good. I think the story is really, really good. So, 4.5 there. I'm also at a 4.5 for Timey Wimey. I think it's really strong as well. I think the elements of time that there are, I'm attributing like the whole forget element. I'm saying the Liz 10 of it all. I think it's really interesting. The fact that we are like in the future of this is, you know, and there are kind of references to, oh, you know, Scotland's its own separate, you know what I mean? Like, I think like the own like little tiny callbacks of like other time related things is also good here. I also think that like Amy's ability to be in the test and like take the thing because she was like a citizen of, you know, like way back in the time and like her age or whatever being a thing. Like I'm there's like a lot of things that go into the time behind me, so I'm in a 4.5 there.
I mean, ask the Scottish if they're English, they might have a different answer, but that's fine. So I'm gonna start with timey wimey. I think I'm at, oh man, I might be at 3.75 here for Timey Wimey. I do think there's a lot of fun time stuff that we haven't really gotten in the series in terms of the idea of like time being manipulated because of memory, which I think is very fascinating. The fact that Elizabeth has lived the same 10 years over and over and over again. Of course, we have the time travel upon which they're in the future and this interesting situation. For us, I like incorporating the what the future is like and how it all functions. And I actually think this is really strong. The idea of a city on the back of an animal is, while not groundbreaking, really fun and really interesting. We have seen motifs of this exist from just really ancient mythology to stuff like Terry Pratchett's Discworld, which is influenced by that, to like there's a lot of stuff to our own game in space on PS on Rich's stream. So like, you know, I think there's a lot of fun stuff there. So 3.75. In terms of Wibbly Wobbly, I'm admittedly a little lower than you guys, but not by a ton. I am at a 4 on this episode. I think it's really, really strong. I think there's a lot of phenomenally great stuff. I will say my criticisms is something that Robin and I have discussed before, but like has lessened as a criticism, we were actually discussing this morning when we watched it, is that there is a theme that Moffat likes to play with, where it's just like the creature and the bad thing isn't as bad as you thought it was. And I do think that is something he plays with quite a bit, but I think it's effective because I think it is a theme that maybe sometimes should exist in these things, that sometimes just because a monster looks scary doesn't mean it's a monster. However, he also balances out that really well, because sometimes the monster is a monster and it's effing horrifying. Because for every one of these, you also have situations like the empty child, you also have like the weeping angels, other things that haven't shown up yet but are creepy AF. The Vashtinirada obviously are like these entities that aren't necessarily malicious but just are dangerous and deadly by nature. So there's a lot of really cool and interesting stuff that I think he also plays in both fields. So anyway, long and short of it is, I'm going to end up at a 4 on this one, which is still, I think, really spectacular and high compared to a lot of other episodes, even from previous seasons. I still think, for me personally, this is stronger than a lot of things we've seen. So that's where I'm going to land here for my Wibbly Wobbly.
Yeah, in terms of the audience for Wibbly Wobbly, they are at a 4 as well, Kevin. So they're right with you. So all of us together, we're at a 4.25, which is, I think, a very like solid score for what this is. Yeah. I'm pretty happy with that. Timey-wimey there at a 3.5. So they're in agreement with Melissa, bringing us to an average of a 3.8 overall. Still very high, all things considered. For, you know, usually you both these scores are a little bit lower. So I'm happy that folks are really vibing with where we're at here in series 5. I think we got some really strong stuff. Only notice that like the 11th hour has gone up a little bit as people have been submitting more scores, and so they were a little bit lower. I don't remember exactly what it was, but we're up to a 4.9 Wibbly Wobbly at a 4.4 Timey Wimey. So we're getting there. Keep sending them in. Keep sending in those fives, baby. Come on.
We can get even higher. I mean, I love that episode. I really enjoyed this episode. We're gonna prep you. We know the next episode is not going to be as strong as the first two. It's still going to be, I think, very fun. It's nowhere going to be as bad as things like Daleks of Manhattan, which, as we've mentioned, is probably
that is not our bar.
It took us like almost an hour and a half to mention that episode of Doctor Who, though. So that's actually like pretty good.
Always got to come up. Yeah. But it's still going to be, I think, pretty good. And then other episodes in the season for us is like, I think, holy crap. And I think there's one in particular that's going to be probably really well received, to say the least. So we're looking forward to that. But that all said, next week we are going to continue into season 5, episode 3, which I just wanted to call Daleks in Manhattan, but is not called that. Does anybody know?
It's Daleks in London. I don't know.
Daleks in London.
I was joking.
Victor the Daleks. That's right. Victor the Daleks. Which is funny. Robin actually owns a poster. that's really fun from this episode that I can talk about next week. But yeah, so season 5, episode 3 next week, Victory of the Daleks. Join us then. And until next time, Geronimo!
It's lunchtime at Tim Hortons, and we're serving up a special deal just for you. Our new $5.99 lunch deal includes your choice of any lunch sandwich and a side of crunchy kettle chips. Because what's lunch without a little crunch? And the sandwich choice is all yours, like a ham and Swiss, Chipotle chicken wrap, BLT, and more, made to order just the way you like it. Tim Hortons' new lunch deal. Simple, delicious, and just $5.99. Now that's a good deal. Only at your neighborhood Tim's. U.S. only. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.